This meeting is being recorded. The recording has stopped.
Let me try my people call. Everybody, welcome. It is Friday, July 30th, 2021. It seems like it has been forever. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Each week, I talk to that guy filled with so much middle-aged millennial angst, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. You can also check out our Monday show at Out the Coop Live and the Wednesday show with Cyril Michaleko. You can get all those by subscribing to our podcast. But right now, look, we're streaming live on YouTube. So don't forget to head on over there, smash that subscribe button, like the stream, and hit the bell so you know every time that we go live. Today's show, the Portman Cinema Infrastructure Bill passed the Senate 67-32. The bill will not deal with the necessary investments for the challenges of climate change, but we're going to see some decent investment. However, of course, Senator Kristen Sinema's statement that she's not ready to support the reconciliation bill that is part two of Biden's infrastructure plan, that means that there is no guarantee that it's going to get support in the House. And now the Democratic Party will face an internal battle over the future, the climate crisis, massive inequality, and perhaps a critical test as to whether our government is capable of doing anything for the vast majority of Americans. This week, the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th insurrection held their first hearings. Capitol Police officers retold their horrifying experiences that day and urged lawmakers to leave no stone unturned when it comes to investigating who was behind the attacks. That includes investigating what happened at the White House and if any representatives were in on the planning. Looking at you, Jim Jordan. Looking at you. Oh, Mo Brooks. What you got under your windbreaker, by the way? According to reporting, the Washington Post, the Delta variant of the coronavirus appears to cause more severe illness than earlier variants and spreads as easily as chicken pox, as according to an internal federal health document. And we're seeing outbreaks of the Delta variant of COVID. Yep, as we're seeing that, we're seeing a rekindling of the anti-masking protests as the right wing looks to capitalize on whatever it can weaponize for their culture war. As the Delta variant burns through the unvaccinated and numbers of breakthrough cases are on the rise, Americans are also facing eviction. The national moratorium on evictions expires Saturday, that's tomorrow, which will allow landlords to begin eviction proceedings against people who have fallen behind on the rent during the pandemic. It is estimated that more than 6 million families have fallen behind on their rent and could face eviction. And a new poll from George Washington University School of Media and Public Affairs found that 47% of Republican voters say, quote, a time will come when patriotic Americans will have to take law into their own hands. That same poll also found that 55% of Republicans said, quote, the traditional American way of life is disappearing so fast we may have to use force to save it. Let that sit with you for a second, huh? Oh, yeah, Nancy Pelosi this week turns to libertarian talking points to argue against wiping out student debt. Yeah, I dare you, send me another fundraising email. They dare you with her name on it. A little closer to home today, in a meeting with President Biden during his recent trip to Pennsylvania, the director of Make the Road Pennsylvania, Megan Lorena, delivered a letter signed by 52 elected leaders from the Commonwealth demanding to shut down Berks County Detention Center once and for all. Go Manny Guzman on that one, too, for his involvement in that. And get ready, Pennsylvania. Are you ready for Frauditpalooza? Yes, Frauditpalooza is getting ready to swing through the state next week as Doug Mastriano's July 31st deadline approaches again tomorrow. There's something else that happens on July 31st, too, as well. I can't remember what it is. Maybe we'll get to that in today's last call. But this is quite a present, I have to say. Mastriano has threatened to issue subpoenas to Tioga, York, and Philadelphia counties if they do not comply with his scam. And if you're not familiar with Republican candidate for Senate Kathy Barnett, well, now might be a good time to check out the recent article in the Philadelphia Inquirer. Barnett is a right-wing African-American woman who is making a name for herself in the MAGA media world. And the kicker is that she has raised more money than any of the GOP hopefuls so far. And she just pulled an endorsement from Michael Flynn. Yes, Michael Flynn. York County officials have called in police after numerous reports of people claiming to be members of an election integrity committee started going home to home asking residents about their voting in the 2020 election. There you go. That was good. Send your thugs out. And Bucks County school board meetings are becoming hotspots of QAnon conspiracies, anti-masking protests, and educational whitewashing, as we have been following on this show and on the Wednesday show with Cyril Michaleko. On Tuesday, tensions came to a head outside Central Bucks school board meeting during a press conference that was held by parents and medical professionals urging the board to make masks mandatory for the upcoming school year. That's really just continuing on their policy. During the press conference, hecklers yelled, "Lies! Child abuse! My kids can't breathe!" And why? We don't know, but murderer! As parents and medical professionals tried to express their concerns for their children and the community. The board voted later that evening to make masks optional. Despite new CDC guidance and a letter signed by over 100 medical professionals urging the board to keep the mask mandate in place. And in today's last call, the new Russian space module that attached to the space station pulled a little oopsie in a docking maneuver. Yep, it docked with the International Space Station, accidentally hit its thrusters, and sent the station into a bit of a spin. You gotta love that. Gotta love that. Also, we gotta say that Sean got a little shout out in today's morning coffee. Way to go, Sean, you bigwig, you. And Sean's also got a big day coming up tomorrow. I think he's going to be 40. Pretty crazy. Want to remind everybody to tune to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org. You can also tune to the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And make sure to subscribe to the Rick Smith Show's daily podcast on iTunes, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast. And now you can also check out Rick's show Saturdays. I think it's 6 to 8 on WBAI in New York. Congratulations, Rick, for landing that. And, you know, and congratulations to Brett, his producer, too, for doing some bang-up work on the back end. Fantastic. And you got to check out the Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast. You can find it on Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcast. The PA women stirring the cauldron behind this podcast rock the house. They know where the bodies are buried. Make sure to follow them on Twitter at the Night Caucus. That's at the Night Caucus on Twitter. And attention gamers, the Gamin, that's with two N's. The Gamin is a Quakertown-based black family-owned gaming store. They're friends of the show, and they've got everything for retro N64s, the latest consoles, video games for all platforms, and loads of collectibles. And look, kids, you know, during the school year, you get an A in your report card, you get a discount. Check them out on their Facebook page or check them out on Twitter at The Game In. Shoot them an email if you got any questions at TheGameInPA, with two N's, TheGameInPA @gmail.com. And a special shout out, as always, goes to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. And check out all his great stuff on the YouTube page and follow him on Twitter at SongOfDayMan. That's at SongOfDayMan with two N's on Twitter. Got to give that special shout out to our brand new member from last week, Emily. Emily, thank you for becoming a patron of Raging Chicken at the $5 a month level. You can be like Emily and you can become a patron of this show to help support progressive media. Because look, we want progressive future. We need progressive media. Support Pulled No Punches, homegrown progressive media today by becoming a patron of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress. That's patreon.com/rcpress. We got rid of Trump. Now the hard work of building a progressive future begins. And we're here for the fight, but we need you. Become a patron for the price of a good beer once a month. Keep the media in the movement in the media. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. Man, Sean, it's been like forever. Good to see you, man.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, it was way last week. It was my niece's birthday, so I had to go home for that.
And how did the birthday go?
Pretty good. I was there for like all of 2.5 hours and left. It was an all-day event, so I did not have to stay, and I was not going to.
Yeah, well, so you stayed just enough time to kind of secure your place as the favorite uncle, I guess.
Yes.
And like the best guy in the family, right?
Yes, because my brother was not there.
So. Oh, even double bonus.
Yes. So, and then my parents are coming up today with my niece and nephew. My birthday's tomorrow, so we're going to be going out for dinner.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. What's that tomorrow?
My birthday is tomorrow.
Ah, yes. That's right. And you're going to
be... I did not even know of the Mysic shout out until I was on my previous call and someone mentioned it. Like, hey, Sean, were you doing work on your birthday? I'm like, what are you talking about? They're like, oh, Mysic gave you a shout out today. And just like, no, my birthday's tomorrow.
Look at that. Sean Kitchen making it to the big time. There you go.
Mastriano's deadline.
Mastriano's deadline is Sean's birthday. It's like
my birthday's also the trade deadline for baseball. Always.
Oh, baseball. July 30. That's still happening? Baseball's still going on?
Yes. There is still a thing called baseball.
Interesting. I hear it's a riveting sport. I'm just kidding. I actually love baseball, but I don't watch it because I don't have the time to watch like hours worth of a game.
People throw a fucking ball around.
Yeah, but I've always loved it. I mean, I appreciate it immensely.
I do, but it's one of my least favorite sports.
Yeah. I do love minor league ball, though. I love going to the ballpark. I love going to the ballpark. I got to say that. I love going to the ballpark. I love going to Phillies games, right? I've only been to a couple like in my life, but I totally enjoy actually the experience of going to games, but it doesn't happen very often. So Sean, let me ask you, okay, look, let's start here. I think one of the most important things that's on the plate right now has to do with these kind of like this two-pronged infrastructure bill that seems to be going forward, right? And the Portman Cinema infrastructure bill passed the Senate two nights ago, I guess, 67-32. But then almost immediately as this is coming out, you have Kristen Sinema saying that, yeah, okay, yeah, support our bill. However, you know that $3.5 trillion package that they're putting together over there in the House, you know, that kind of reconciliation bill? Yeah, that's too expensive. We're not going to go with that. And the Democrats need every single vote in order to get the reconciliation passed through. And so a bunch of House members, right, particularly in the Progressive Caucus, but not entirely just in Progressive Caucus, have basically said, no, we need both. We need the Senate to pass the reconciliation package before we will even consider the Portman Cinema bill. So this has the potential to sink it all, which basically sets up a huge fight in the Democratic Party.
Which there should be. I mean, you shouldn't be passing one and having someone like Sinema pull out from the deal and not pass the other. So if it, you know, I think the Democrats should stand firm and should sink it. You know, I have not been following the situation. I did not realize that was the situation, but Kyrsten Sinema is a horrible human being. She's a narcissist, and I really think all she cares about is getting a reaction out of people. I mean, I think that's pretty much apparent at this point. She's not even a narcissist like a Joe Manchin narcissist, who is about like the branding of Joe Manchin.
Right.
Like this is just like a wild card, incompetent, like sociopathic, like she's just gonna fuck shit up for the point of doing that. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and
it's totally not someone who should be in office at this point.
No, and you notice that, you know, what's really interesting is that Manchin is really just kind of like sitting back at this point. Right? I think Manchin has, I mean, I think
someone has to pull her to the side and tell her to sit down, shut the fuck up and vote for this bill.
Yeah,
we'll see. I mean, which is like.
We'll see.
I mean, but it also goes to show you how weak the leadership of the Democratic Party is, too, if that hasn't been done already. Like, if, like, you can't will this through. Like, you know, this is Biden's signature plan. Like, Biden's not putting the screws to her. Like, or someone's not, like, or Schumer. Like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, who's sitting down with her and telling her to, like, shut up and get in line at this point? Because you're just doing this to really just, like, promote your own brand as a chaos creator, and that's it.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's be clear why this is so critical. It's not just that it's about, like, you know, they want to talk about just the numbers. But let's remember what happened in this split bill, right? You had the Republicans who said they were not going to support anything, right? They would only support, like, traditional kind of infrastructure, right? So almost all of the climate stuff that is necessary to secure your infrastructure for the kind of climate crisis that we are barreling ahead into, right? That's when it was stripped out. Say, okay, fine. If that's a condition of getting this infrastructure bill set, and again, there's some stuff that will kind of affect climate stuff that are positive advances, but they're like baby steps advancements. But the rest of the stuff about Biden's bill, about building out the infrastructure, whether you want to call it the caring infrastructure, the human infrastructure, right, the resilience of communities, right, our electrical grids and things like this for the climate crisis, which is coming about, that's all in the reconciliation bill. Right, all the stuff that was like the main parts about Biden's agenda for infrastructure, right, and looking ahead to the future, preparing for the future, is in the reconciliation bill. So this bill, this infrastructure bill that's going forward, while there are a few kind of like gimmies to some climate stuff like public transportation and so on, but even that got pared way back, it will not prepare us for the kind of climate crisis. And so when Kyrsten Sinema says, "I'm sorry, but $3.5 trillion is just too expensive," as she's sitting there clutching her pearls and her designer dresses, right? That means that she's basically sending us off into a climate apocalypse, right? I mean, that's kind of like what that ultimately means down the road.
Yeah. And it's just like, I feel like it's just getting past the point of her just showing up like in like non-regular attire. Like, you know what I mean? For the Senate. Like, I feel like that act is getting old.
Yeah.
With a lot of the people who like care about the political stuff, and it's like, okay, you're just using this to like be it like as cover to be a horrible Democrat, like when in time, like we need everyone on board.
Right. Exactly. Well,
and it's just like, it's just immature-ish at this point. Like it's
but it's dangerous, right? I mean, yeah. But I mean, this is like, she's literally holding like the directions of the future, right, in this kind of like I don't know, self-aggrandizement or whatever the heck you want to say,
isn't this like what we expect from Green Party people who get into power?
Well, that seems to be the pattern, isn't it?
It's just a look at me type fest, but
that seems to have been the pattern. Well, listen, David Day and his write-up of the bill that got passed, he closed out his piece like this. He said, "Some impossible choices on what the left sees as already a compromise down from $6 trillion would have to be made to accommodate Sinema. House progressives who had much more than enough numbers to block anything could use that to reject Sinema's changes. And several have already said that they would not pass the bipartisan bill without the reconciliation bill. In a real sense, you either get both bills or neither. That's a fight for another day, and it will be an excruciating one, carried out entirely among Democrats. This was actually the Republicans' plan. Give a modest infrastructure package that's more about things that they can tout like highways and internet access, and watch the opposition party devolve into madness trying to wrestle the rest of the agenda into one package." Right. So that's kind of like how he kind of closes out that article. So here's the question I have for you, right, is that Bernie Sanders was over meeting with Nancy Pelosi, right, basically kind of, because Nancy Pelosi so far has basically been holding the line on saying both these packages got to get passed. And now Sanders is over there meeting with Pelosi, making sure that she's on board, right? And making sure that he's going to put his weight behind whatever they do, you know, for the House holding firm. The question is, do you think the Democrats are going to be able to hold a line, or will they cave and then just pass some kind of like half-ass reconciliation bill?
We'll see. I mean, like, I think that they should sink the infrastructure bill if they don't get what they want, and use that power that they have.
Yeah, we'll see if they do it. I mean, Pramila Jayapal seems to be committed to do this.
The Progressive Party hasn't really, progressive wing of the Democratic Party really hasn't done anything over the past 4 years. I mean, to some extent, with leveraging policy. Like, you know what I mean? I feel like the Progressive Caucus has allowed people to join the caucus without extracting any like blood from, like, you know what I mean, will from them. Like they're just joining, "I'm a progressive in name only, joining this." And then like when it comes to throw your weight behind things, like they just don't do it, or they haven't done it, and now's the time to do it.
Yeah, I agree. And it's like, and I think that, you know, again, since 2018, when you saw the election of the squad, and now you see those numbers kind of increasing there, I think they've been building that sense that you're talking about, building toward that's where we're going to getting ready to kind of leverage power. And, you know, again, as much as like the Jimmy Dores and all those people who wanted to force the vote on kind of Medicare for all early on with like no organizational plan, this seems to be like, this is where you exercise the cost. Right. If you're not going to do it now, like I really also believe that the future of the, say, the progressive movement with the internal progressive movement in Congress right now rests upon the like progressives holding the line here and to deal with the fact that go ahead and sink this bill if necessary in order to make sure that this stuff gets passed.
Yeah. I mean, like one person shouldn't be allowed to like hold this bill hostage because they're doing it just because of being a narcissist. Like that's just, there's just no other like reason. Like, you know what I mean? There's just no other logical reason.
Yep.
No, and I mean like Biden and people should be putting screws to sentiment on this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let me ask you this too as well. Did you catch any of the hearings this week about the January 6th insurrection?
I caught some of the highlights.
Yeah.
Of them. So there's a couple of things that we talked before the podcast that I think we're going to, we were in agreement on. Basically, that Democrats are going to fuck this up. Like, no, I mean, like, we're already seeing this week with the top-down edicts from the Pelosi's office that House Democrats are going to rebrand, defund the police, and use that as an attack against Republicans for not supporting Capitol police officers, which is just fucking stupid. I mean, like, you want a message? You want, like, what's one of, like, Alinsky's first rules? Define your enemy?
Yeah, right.
Like, these people are terrorists.
Right.
And they committed a terroristic attack on the country.
Right. And as I was saying
before, are domestic terrorists. They committed a terrorist attack, and you are terrorist sympathizers for supporting them.
How hard is that?
These are the three sentences that should be repeated on every talk show during this commission. Not like, and like, you know, Madeleine Dean's people got involved with this, but like, not like having sending Madeleine Dean out, who is good and who I respect, but like she's doing this to deliver the talking points from a top-down fashion. These aren't like her, like this is not her coming up with this. This is most likely Pelosi's office, House leadership coming up with this stuff, spinning this argument into a defund the police argument. When no, like, framing this as a domestic terrorist attack and framing these supporters like Mo Brooks and others as domestic terrorists or domestic terrorist sympathizers is the frame.
Right.
No one gives a fuck about defund the police.
Because look,
and when you adopt defund the police as your message and your attack against Republicans, you're only emboldening the police, and you're marginalizing your communities, in the communities of color, because you want the white suburban vote.
Exactly. This is where Democrats actually believe that calling out hypocrisy is a platform.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's like it that is the most absurd thing. Like, see, they're the one. No, it's not us. It's them who really want to do this. Look at the hypocrite. That, what does that do?
And that was their like retort. Like, this is, we're calling out the hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Like, they're shameless people.
Yeah. Look, again, you want to call out the hypocrisy. Okay, fine, whatever. But to equate that with actually doing something and having some political strategy is not it. This whole kind of move towards like, say, no, Republicans, it's just ridiculous. And like we're saying, look, the Capitol police officers who testified on the January 6th commission, right, that were there, they got it. They referred to, at least I think three of the four of them referred to the insurrectionists as terrorists, right? It's like the police just handed you your talking point, right? And you know, and they should be going with that and basically say, and say, well, what do you want from this commission? They asked them at the end, right? And they're like, we want you to investigate who is behind this, no matter how high as it goes, and who are those in power, because you are now the only check, right? Referring to the committee, the legislators. You are the only check. You have to kind of sort this out. And so, exactly as you said, so that follows there. Look, terrorists attacked our Capitol. We have to root out who was behind bolstering the terrorists, sending buses of terrorists to the Capitol, and people in government who colluded with, conspired with, and provide material assistance to those terrorists. How hard is that?
Yeah, I mean, like, that is the messaging that, like, but no, like, Democrats are going to play 4D chess and try to, like, rebrand and do a 180 with defund the police and somehow, like, you know, waste mental energy trying to convince people that, like, these people are the hypocrites when hypocrisy and shame doesn't really matter. Like, do you honestly, like, let's have this conversation. Like, do you do you people remember the 2000s when Democrats came out against the Iraq war and what Republicans spent years saying, like, forcing the Democrats to support this war? They called them terrorist sympathizers.
Exactly.
In order to force them to support a war that was complete bullshit. And everyone knew it was bullshit at the time. And the Democrats went along with it.
Yep.
Well, like, just about everyone in the House voted for it. A handful of senators didn't vote for it. Like, you know, Biden and Clinton both voted for it. But, like, I mean, like, the Republicans spent months and years calling any Democrat who spoke yep. out against the Iraq war as a terrorist sympathizer who hates the troops.
Yep. Yep.
And it fucking scared them into, like, supporting this stuff. Like,
well, this is what, you know, Nick said in the chat too. This is where, because the Democrats become, like, afraid of their own power, right? Because they think that if they exercise it, then somehow they're going to be called out. Like, this is the thing, right? This is all about what politics.
We can't call the insurrectionists an insurrectionist because then it will hurt our, like, working relationships with them, and we can't get stuff done in D.C.
It's like crazy
when they caused the riot.
It's really remarkable. You know, look, every time the Democrats think they're doing this kind of stuff and they think they're playing 4D chess, like you were saying, I think somebody's got to come along and point out the fact that they're actually playing tic-tac-toe. That's not 4D chess. That's a game called tic-tac-toe. And you know how most tic-tac-toe games end? With no winner, right? So you're going down a freaking dead end, right? You're going down a dead end. You're playing a child's game, right? When you need to kind of be able to stand up and exercise your freaking power, period. Right? I mean, these people, they hide their, I agree, their fear of their own power, right? And their kind of like lack of organizational strategy. They hide it in kind of like supposed sophistication.
And this sanctity of the institutions.
Jesus Christ.
That they still think that, like, these institutions have. Like,
yeah. I'm sorry. I did not expect to get worked up about this right now. I'm just going to say that for now.
No, but I mean, it's really frustrating. Like, yeah, it just shows how fucking stupid, like, everything is. But I mean, like, Democrats, you know, like we were saying, this should be a truth and, like, accountability commission at the very least. We need the truth out there. I don't know, like, if the Democrats are going to be able to do that properly. Like, I mean, like, we have to be talking about. I mean, like, I went to all these rallies and events in Harrisburg. I saw Nick Fuentes speaking on the Capitol steps. Like, I tracked all this stuff. Like, all of that stuff. It'll be damaging if your Democrats don't want to talk about the messaging that happened after the election, the lies. Like, if they just gloss over that and look over Trump's lies, then there's just no point in this commission.
Right.
And I have a feeling they're going to do that. I have a feeling they're going to make this about the attack on the Capitol. I don't have a feeling, and I don't have the faith that they're going to talk about or dig into, like, the months of organizing.
Right.
That went into this.
Right, and this is the problem. But, you know, again,
or dig into the money that went into this, the groups that are spending money on this, who are paying for all these buses, you know, like, and all that stuff. Like,
yeah, I agree. Look, I mean, we could separate out these things, right? And just exactly as you're saying, is that this commission should happen, right? And I think it's absolutely necessary and to be done seriously, right? But if you know, if Democrats think they're just, this is what they're going to run on, right, it's not going to have the legs that they think they do. And it inadvertently helps bolster claims by Republicans saying that the Democrats are politicizing like, you know, this, you know, the insurrection.
No, but it should be politicized. The insurrection should be a political.
No. But I mean, like, politicized. You're absolutely right. I agree. But I mean that they're doing it simply so they have a campaign slogan. That's what I mean by that. I do think it should be politicized, but politicizing.
I think it should be part of every single attack piece, like in its 2022 election. Like, I don't think anyone should be able to forget about this, because I think, like, this has to be a front and central issue in the 2022 campaign, in my opinion. Like, no, you people fucking lied and caused an insurrection and haven't stopped since. Like, I don't know what the Democrats do if they don't address that in the campaign, because I fear that they won't. I fear they're going to get caught up in this, like, in this culture war stuff that the Republicans are running as a diversion.
Right. But, like, yes, I hear you that. Like, I hear that, right?
And they have to deliver this stuff with the budget, too, but...
But my point is this, right? Is, like, I do think that's absolutely necessary. Like, say, for example, when we were talking about Doug Mastriano as a perfect example, right? Doug Mastriano hired buses and sent a bunch of kind of insurrectionists down to the Capitol and surveyed the entire thing throughout the day. That has to be absolutely central to the campaign, right? Absolutely essential. But at the same time, I don't think that what I mean when I'm saying going into Republican talking points, right? I'm talking about this is kind of more of a national level in terms of kind of what's going to happen in terms of like how the Republicans are going to pull this up. If all they say is like we're going to have this commission, right? We're going to have this commission and we're not going to do the kind of deep investigation of it, but we're just going to point out hypocrisy, that's not going to go anywhere. Right. What they need to do is they need to dig deep and to kind of like, yeah, absolutely go after them. And at the same time, right, they've got to have more than that. Right. I mean, I think that, you know, Democrats actually have to have a plan going forward. It cannot just be like, you know, again,
what know your plan is for 2022?
What, bad man two?
Pay your fucking loans.
Oh, God.
Pay your fucking loans.
Well, look, before we get there, because I want to go off, I do want to touch on this too. We're gonna close out with that for the here, because like this is it. So we're gonna talk. Anyways, I just got to say, I want to put this on everybody's radar again, like, because this is becoming increasingly like frustrating to me and concerning. Right, the Delta variant has been kind of appearing kind of very, very worse than had first expected. Right. I am the last person in the world right now who actually wants to go back to kind of a shutdown. I have like had it. I need this to be over, and I need people to mask up. Okay. And seriously, I wear my mask still into stores and things like this because of this. There's new reporting that just came out last night in from the Washington Post. Basically, after showing this internal document, this studies that's coming out that was circulating in the kind of the Department of Health and CDC, basically saying, look, that it looks like that this could actually cause more severe illness than earlier variants. And it's also been coming out that it turns out that those who are already vaccinated, right, can spread it, right, as easily as those who have not been vaccinated because of the way that it sits in your nasal passages and so on. So the virus load is much bigger. Right. And we got to remember that we still have kids that are under 12 who are not eligible for the vaccine at this point. This is like concerning. And you're finding out that at the local school district level and the state across the country and, you know, state legislators and state meetings across the country that, you know, these kind of like anti-masker culture war people are kind of showing up at these meetings. And again, you know, school boards and others are balking because of all this pushback, and they're kind of saying, we're going to make it optional, right? In St. Louis, Missouri, for example, they had one of the directors of the health and infectious diseases there. He's responsible for public health. I forget his title. His last name is Fodd, I think. People were screaming racial epithets to the guy, right? They kind of like shouted him down and talked over them as they were kind of like rescinding the mask mandates. Right. And not listening. I mean, it's pretty crazy. So, I mean, deep breaths, slowly move forward. Like, let's do what's right here, people, because it's not look good. Do check out in the show notes today some of the articles, particularly the one for The Washington Post, if you haven't seen it already. The woman, the journalist who was one of the lead journalists on that piece, was also interviewed, I think, on on All In with Chris Hayes last night, or maybe it was Rachel Maddow Show. I'm not sure. They were on last night too as well. But the article is absolutely fantastic. Please go ahead and read it. And also, while you're at it, check out that George Washington University poll that shows that, you know, 47% of Republicans believe that, you know, they're going to have to take matters of the law into their own hands. And 55% of Republicans say that, you know, we may have to use force to save the traditional way of life. I mean, that gives you a sense of where we're at. Meanwhile, right, in the kind of policy that could actually have an impact and a positive impact on people's lives seems to be not registering with the leader, you know, the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, when it comes to forgiving student loans. So, Sean, I'm sure that you were probably, you know, convinced after you heard Nancy Pelosi come forward that, yeah, forgiving student loan, not even, don't forget, wiping student loan clean is probably a bad idea because other people might object.
Yeah. I mean, like, why should, am I on?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. Sorry. I didn't know. It's hard. Like not having, I was distracted. I'm not, I also don't have like my mouse right here. So I'm like using my left hand. No, I think it's fucking bullshit that, that what Pelosi said with, the student loan stuff. No, I mean like, libertarian talking points, pretty much the stuff I heard growing up. Like, I sent my kids to Catholic school. Why should I pay for public education?
Yep.
Because then public education wouldn't be public.
Yep.
Like, it's.
I was literally.
I don't know, like, how.
My jaw hit the table.
I still. Yeah. And that she pretty much told, like, the Senate Dems to shut up and stop, like, getting people's hopes up and shit like that. This has to be a bill. Like, I wonder, like, who got to her? Like, was it, like, one of the committee chairs, like, that are part of, bought by the insurance industry or, like, the banking industry? Or was it, like, her herself?
I think, that said that? Look, I think she is part of that kind of, like, you know, Clinton wing of the party that believes, like, believes in the means testing stuff of kind of, like, not in universal programs, wants targeted. I mean, look, she's the one who's insistence on all the pay fors, right? She's the paygo person. And so I think that is part of the way that she thinks about the world. And I think that, look, that she had been quiet about it. And, you know, she got challenged on it. And I don't think she was prepared to answer the question. And so she went back to her talking points. And it just so happens is like those are the same talking points that the right wing are using right now. Like that, you know, yeah, suppose that your kid decides not to go to college and then you're paying taxes to support somebody else going to college. I don't think people would like that. I mean, that is like the most backward way of approaching this. And like, again, you're talking about a policy that would have tangible impacts immediately on people's lives, would improve the economy, and would kind of be able to hit a hard restart on the way that we organize our economy. I mean, this is a no-brainer, especially when you're talking about the ways in which that the student loan industry and really the big banks and all this have basically bilked people, right, on these loans and basically have indentured them for years of servitude and crappy jobs just so that they can pay back the interest and the things on these loans. I mean, I can't believe it. And then for her to basically come out and say that Joe Biden doesn't have the power to do this, right? He only has the power to pause it. Like, she, even in her answer by saying he doesn't have the power to do this, she basically gives up the game, right? You say, okay, let's say he doesn't have the power to do this, but he can hit pause, can't he? Even by your own admission, he can hit pause on this and stop all those payments and kind of defer all these loans while Nancy Pelosi, while you put in the bill to kind of to get rid of all these loans. But we've seen the reporting in the American Progress and other places. We've dug deep into this to show that, no, actually, Joe Biden does have this authority. That is exactly what Chuck Schumer is saying. That's exactly what Elizabeth Warren is saying and why they're supporting student loan forgiveness and student loan wiping student debt free in the Senate. So we shall see. But I think that's probably one of the worst messaging rollouts that I've seen, especially as you're kind of starting to gear up toward the 2022 election.
Yeah.
Sean says, so. Yeah, he's busy with other stuff right now. So
no, I'm good.
All right, we're gonna take a quick break, and then we're gonna head into little stuff that's happening a little bit closer to home, because Pennsylvania, I'm telling you, like, that is heating.
Fraudapalooza.
Oh my God, Fraudapalooza! Here we go. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. I want to remind you that you become a patron, help support this show by going to patreon.com/rcpress. We'll be back right after this quick break.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1866. That was the day known as the Mechanics Institute Massacre. Black and white Republicans in New Orleans called a constitutional convention to consider voting rights for African Americans. It would be another 3.5 years before the ratification of the 15th Amendment. Freedmen, many of them Civil War veterans, gathered at the Faubourg Marne and proceeded to march to the convention held at the Mechanics Institute on Canal Street. Just before they reached the Institute, black Republicans were confronted by a mob of white Democrats, ex-Confederate soldiers, and police determined to prevent blacks from attaining any semblance of civil or political rights. The delegates were able to momentarily beat back the mob and reach the Mechanics Institute. But the racist mob charged again and started shooting. By the time it was over, at least 50, mostly black Republicans, were shot dead in the street. More than 200 were seriously injured. Historian Justin Nystrom notes that it was an absolute massacre. But he adds, it was actually very useful to the Republican Party because it gave them a concrete example of the kinds of problems former Confederates were causing in the South. He adds that events such as these helped influence voters to bring more radical Republicans into Congress. These politicians would be key to passing the Reconstruction Acts. Nystrom points to a poem written by Camille Naudin to commemorate the one-year anniversary of the massacre. Titled Ode to the Martyrs, the poem mourns the massacred while bitterly observing that Jefferson Davis remained alive. But for the mulattoes, blacks, and whites, this fact I must tell, she writes. Victor LaCroix is dead. Jeff Davis lives still. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Everybody, welcome back. This is Kevin Mahoney once again here with Sean Kitchen, talking about the good, the bad, the ugly in state and national politics. Well, it was a big news week in Pennsylvania. There's no way we could get to it all, but before we get into you, kind of one of the bigger stories of the week, I want to give a shout out to Manny Guzman and also the folks for the Make the Road Pennsylvania, who have been fighting to shut down the Berks County Detention Center once and for all. Berks County Detention Center is a place that they would hold undocumented, you know, kind of immigrants and families in these detention centers. They've been fighting for years to get this shut down. The detention center is finally, right now, is cleared of any. There's nobody there. And so they see this the moment to actually shut this down. The director of Make the Road Pennsylvania, Megan Lorena, she was able to meet with Joe Biden, and while he was here in town, basically up in Macungie, Pennsylvania, supporting kind of Buy American, he was up at Mack Trucks and things like this. She delivered a letter to him for 52 elected leaders, basically urging Biden to shut down the Berks County Detention Center once and for all and break its contract with ICE. Manny Guzman was also kind of out there, was able to say to Biden to reinforce that. And while no promises were made, we do hear from the organizations that he promised to kind of look into it and give it some careful consideration. So that's just a shout out to those folks to getting to this point with that kind of backing, that kind of support to shut down the Berks County Detention Center once and for all. But big news this week is that we're getting ready for, it's the reopen time. It's time for concerts, time for thing, and it's time for Fraudapalooza. Yes, indeed. Sean, take us away. What's going on?
Yes. Fraudapalooza is going to be coming to a county courthouse near you pretty soon.
Now, Sean, your everyday Pennsylvania might ask, what exactly is Fraudapalooza?
Fraudapalooza is a promotional event being held by State Senator Doug Mastriano. and his audit the vote minions across the state. Basically, Mastriano has given a deadline, self-imposed deadline, until or the imposed deadline for counties to return his request for July 31st, which is tomorrow, my birthday.
Little birthday and, present for you.
And Mastriano has threatened subpoenas afterwards if that's ended. Now, like, you know, this is what, you know, the timeline of this is Mastriano is going to use a committee that he has no power to use the committees for in attacking going through this process. But, you know, what do you think would happen when someone like Jay Corman gives Mastriano a committee chair? Pretty much like what, like, do it throughout, like, right after attending the insurrection. So, I mean, like, if there's one person who can really put a hold to this, it's Jay Corman, who can pull Mastriano's committee position, and we won't have any subpoenas. But I don't expect that happening because, accountability and, courage is not something that Jay Corman has. So
let's put it bluntly.
Yeah. So I mean, like, so we're probably gonna go through this stuff for the next couple weeks.
And from my understanding too as well, I believe like Tioga County, I don't know if York too as well, but basically have just said that, look, they're not gonna comply by handing over voting machines and things like this to this committee. Right. We already saw in Fulton County, right, that that said, OK, we're going to hand these things over. So then they got the letter from the state basically saying you can't use those machines anymore.
$10,000.
Right.
No. And I mean, like, Department of State, we're seeing this acceleration from the Wolf administration, the AG's office, basically saying, like, anything that happens with these subpoenas is illegal, not authorized. It's a third party. They broke the chain of custody with these machines in Fulton County, compromised them, and waste tens of thousands of dollars. We're seeing what's happening in, like, we saw what happened in Arizona, how much that's costing them. I mean, these machines can cost counties millions of dollars. And I mean, all this does is just allows people to keep on spreading the election lie, the lie that the Republicans sowed. And now you have these people like Mastriano and others running with it. And you have this Election Integrity Commission, quote unquote, big air quotes with that, popping up, intimidating, asking voters in New York County what they voted for, who they voted for. And I mean, like, so this is happening. It's all going to be happening next week. But so, like, brace yourselves. I think we mentioned before, but I'll mention again. I like what Sisters of Nighthead called this a couple weeks ago when they had their emergency Mastriano episode, like 3 or 4 weeks back. And basically said that, like, this is a, like, PSYOPs campaign.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what this is. There's only been, like, one other person I've heard frame this, and that's a national journalist, like, calling this a PSYOPs. And this is what this stuff is. This is definitely a PSYOPs, like, play that he's doing.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, we see that Pennsylvania is taking the, you know, is being front and center, like, in the way that Arizona had been. I mean, the Arizona, you know, recount is just like, look, it's one of the biggest grifts that you could possibly ask for. And the way I've been thinking about a lot of what we see with...
Oh, what?
Go ahead, sorry.
No, I mean, like, okay, gross. I watched the Wednesday show. So yeah. When you mentioned, like, the franchisee license, this is a franchising license.
Yes.
I actually started laughing at that because it's exactly what this is.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, it's a template. It's a grifting template for all these people. And I mean, like, Mastriano's doing it, obviously, with his campaign purposes. Like, we don't even know this guy's going to be fucking running for governor right now. Like,
well, that's can I ask you that? Like, what do you think is going on with that? Because, you know, he emerged early as the potential, like, front runner as a kind of the Republican nominee for the for governor. Do you think that's where he's going to end up now?
I think he's the front runner when he announces. But like,
the if is the big question, right?
Yeah, I'm still stuck on the if. And I think a lot more people are, like, moving into, like, it's certain he's running to, like, the if. I mean, you know, since it wasn't on, you know, we didn't really have this much time to talk about it since, like, you know, you were away, I was away
right.
for a bit, and then, like, wasn't on last week. But, like, you know, like, he has, like, two main people who gotten arrested, like, that have flanked him everywhere he's been.
Right.
With Lazar and Wire, Sandy Wire.
Yeah. Right. Lazar was pretty, I mean, a pretty significant get, right? He just got arrested. What? Oh, you're right.
Sorry. Yeah, Lazar was arrested a few weeks ago. So Lazar has been pictured with Mastriano numerous times, different stuff, steel rallies in Harrisburg and DC, like, you know, between the erect, from like last year to now, there's about like 5 or 10 photos with him and Mastriano. Lazar is like a Mastriano groupie. Lazar was told by Mastriano himself, like the last rally he showed up at the Capitol steps, to stop and distance himself. And like, there's this whole drama playing out, like with Lazar's family calling out Mastriano and all that, for him telling the Lazars to back off. Cause like, he is like, actually, like, they were close, like they've been close, and like, there's that. So Lazar's arrested this past week, Wire's arrested. You have two people he's connected with, get charged with violent felonies from the insurrection on January 6th. How many others on his buses went into the Capitol and being arrested?
Right.
I mean, I also think, like, you know, we're still not seeing the big fish getting dropped in with these FBI investigations. And it's like, you know, I kind of like think about with like, with Bob Ney going on, the Rick show all the time saying, like, there's one thing government has, it's time and money. And when they start going after you, they'll never run out of the time or money to like nail you on something.
Right.
And it's like, we're still, I think, like a few months away from seeing, like, you know, that next rung of people start dropping. People who, like, I don't know how Mo Brooks, like Jim Jordan, others don't get charged or like drug through the mud with this. But I don't also don't see how like Mastriano's name doesn't come through this. Like, even if his name is like as a co-conspirator, or like emails and communications are brought up to this commission with him, like, you know, he's been involved. There's been stories about his, Congress already has some of his emails, you know, like on the record from all this stuff. I honestly, like, it's starting to become a debate whether he runs or not. I'm not sure if he runs. I think if he does, he's the favorite for the nominee. Like, I don't see anyone beating him. Like,
yeah, I don't either. But it's like, I just keep on getting this sense, and that I'm glad you're saying that, because it kind of confirms this, like, this kind of hunch that I've been feeling. It's like, you know, it seems to me that there's some question about whether or not he's actually kind of wants to run. It looked like he was all gearing up towards it, but I don't know if it's this, you know.
I mean, like, the videos of him being spotted closer to the insurrection, like, literally on the steps of the Capitol.
Right.
Like, feet from the doors, but I got preached.
But this is what's strange for me, though, right? Because it would seem,
I mean,
that
did he lie to the state police? I mean, he's been questioned by the state police. I mean, it hasn't been reported, but, like, I mean, everyone knows about it in Harrisburg. He's been approached by the state police. So, like, you got to think about this. This guy's a pathological liar. So, like, sociopathically, do you think he, do you think he, like, you know what I mean? Like,
but, like, here's the thing, like, because in that world, though, right, all those things
I mean,
would,
like,
seem,
like,
to set him up perfectly, like, to claim the kind of the MAGA mantle, right?
But seem like, but getting caught lying to the state police on this type of issue, like, is not a good look. Like, you know what I mean? Like, politically.
Right, it's not a good look, but like, what, like, why does that even matter when it comes to the Republican base? It doesn't.
No, it doesn't matter, but, like, I think if he's nominee, I think it'll be, like, Wagner again. I'll be surprised if Mastriano gets 40% of the vote. But, like, I don't want to get to that point.
Right, but, I mean, we'll see. But here's how it plays it out for me, right? Because it doesn't seem to me that with people like Mastriano, right, and in that MAGA world, like, the calculation about whether you could actually kind of win the general is not, it doesn't matter, right? Because ultimately, you're going to be grifting regardless. And that's what that's what makes me think, like, what's this guy's game? Like, why hasn't he come out and claimed that mantle now? Because he could be raking in tons of the MAGA cash.
Oh,
right,
I think he's fucking raking in money right now.
Right. Like, maybe just thinking that, okay, we don't need the headache. We can go this other franchise model and just kind of become the stop the steal kind of thing.
Okay. So the Kathy Barnett.
Okay. Like, yeah. Stuff. That article in the Philadelphia Inquirer on Kathy Barnett was freaking awesome. Right. Yeah. I mean, seriously, I was like, I have to say, I was, you know, we've talked about her just like a bit on the show. I was kind of aware of her. There was a report that came out about her fundraising numbers like last month. You know, I was like, okay, well, who is this? Didn't really kind
she
of pay a whole
$600,000.
Right. And again, let's be clear. Fetterman has raised like over like 2 million. Right. And he's doubled what was the next person in line. What's her face? Arkush is raised. Right. So like $600,000 compared to what the money that Fetterman is bringing in right now, it's not a lot of money when it comes to it overall. However,
that's
she's
pretty piss poor, if you ask me. Like,
yes, but the fact she's dwarfed everyone else.
Yeah. Which makes it even worse.
Right.
So, okay. So here's a couple of things I'll say about this.
This article, by the way, is by Andrew Seidman, right? In the Philadelphia Inquirer, right? The piece is called, or it's in The Hunt. Right. And it's a kind of a profile of Kathy Barnett. It's absolutely critical. Definitely check out this article in the show notes. Go check it. So go for it.
So before I get into the article, I don't think Barnett will be the nominee, obviously. I think the story is a really good like profile into like how powerful the grift is.
Absolutely.
Like,
absolutely.
This is just like this is required reading for anyone who wants to become a con artist. Like it's just fucking right there. I think the nominee is gonna be this woman named Carla Sands. She was the Trump campaign finance director in California. She was a Pennsylvania resident, married this businessman, became, I don't know what her background is, but like her husband fucking hated Trump, got all the people not to donate to Trump. Husband dies, she gets the company, she becomes a huge Trump donor over the past couple of years. Carla Sands is the woman who claimed to have issues voting in Pennsylvania, where she's from, Mechanicsburg, but she didn't vote in Pennsylvania. She voted in California. Used that, like that was like one of her election lies. She, in my opinion, is going to be the Trump candidate. Trump named her to like ambassador of Denmark. Like, so I think it like Sean Parnell and good. So Parnell and Bardos are just wasting their fucking time at this point. Like Carla Sands, I think, is going to be the handpicked Trump nominee. So there's that. Now, holy shit, what a story. So I was contacted for this story by Seidman because one of the people that was profiled in this story, someone I was posting about a while ago, mm-hmm. Vico Bertogli is his name. We talked about him like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, I know. This is like old. I mean, I was looking at this, I'm like, oh my God.
So, Seidman reaches out to me. He's like, hey, I'm working on a story. Like, can I call? I was like, sure, here's my number. I'm like, what do you need to talk to me about? It's about Vico Bertogli. I'm like, oh, okay. Like something like what this guy get himself into now. So we're talking, asking all these questions. Like I'm trying to like pry it out of him. Like why you're there's a reason why you're calling me.
Right.
About this guy. Like, I mean, I pretty much like outed this guy's Reddit account, his Gab account, did a bunch of like basic research on him like 5 years ago. My tweets are still on the internet with that. So like that's where Seidman probably found who this guy Brew was, Vico Bertogli, traced it back to my Twitter account, got in touch with me through there. So, but like, there's that. And Bertogli was like a minor player in it. And Simon's like, yeah, he's doing some, like, I call him like some vote count stuff. I'm like, okay. So, and that's how he framed it. And it wasn't until like I started reading the story, I'm like, oh, this must be it. Like, and I just like, it took me forever to get down to this guy's name. By that point, like, yeah, like this woman, the story was amazing. I think it shows you how powerful the grift is.
Yes.
And also, like, we've talked about this before, but like, people don't realize this. I was at Kathy Barnett's first like kickoff event here in Pennsylvania.
Yep.
Ate a massive brownie beforehand, got really stoned for an 8 a.m. hearing.
We're excited about that.
Happened to walk into, well, that was the hearing. I got the pictures of the people with the I love CO2.
Yep. I remember.
Just like, this is what this with. Okay, this is what like dystopic morning in the Capitol is like when it's like when we were back in normal times.
Yeah, remember like, this, folks. This was normal times. Just so we're clear.
I'm at that point, but like I'm just don't know what I'm walking into. It like this hearing, it's like 10 a.m. You know, I ate like more than what I should have eaten for this brownie, so it's just like ramping up at this point, like going to 100. And I walk into the media center, and the whole entire fucking room is packed. It is packed with people from the anti-abortion stuff, and also like packed with anti-vaxxers, which like gives you a really good, like thinking about it now in today's context.
Exactly.
Like it gives you like, this is like where these anti-vaxxers and right-wing religious people, like one of the, I don't know how long like they've been teaming up together, but like, you know, like this is when the anti-vax movement took that like hard right wing, my personal freedom turn that we're seeing now with the stuff with the vaccine. This was like in 2019.
Right. It was like October literally, I remember this you like talking about this
for the pandemic.
It was like walking into like the map room, right? And being like, now I see the play. And you're like, and I see gargoyles in the sky too as well.
Like, and it was just like, I but like Kathy Barnett spoke there. She has this like batshit fucking story that her mother survived rape at 11, which if that's the case, that's right. Very tragic. And that she survived like abortion or something like that, or considered abortion, and had Kathy just showed up to Harrisburg one day, and that's where her political career began. That October with Doug Mastriano. So like this whole entire thing, in my opinion, has been planned out for like, I feel like them running together has been planned out since that time in 2019. But then like looking back at the trajectory, everything has gone on, and you know, with the pandemic thrown in there and, you know, conspiracies about a stolen election, this is where we're at. Like this is...
Well, what I think,
but it's also what's fucking nuts about the story is like, going back to that first Barnett, she's like, this is where you first got a glimpse, like reflecting on it, first got the like real glimpse of like how crazy the pre-pandemic right wing was.
Yeah.
With these Dominionist Christians, the people Eliza wrote about pretty much, and the people Eliza covers, blending that together with this anti-vax libertarian thing.
Yes, and I think, you know, and what you also get a sense of in this article, and was also evident, like you're saying at that hearing, was the kind of money that is involved behind and supporting these networks, right? I mean, let me give you one example. There's some in the article, it cites a podcast that a show basically that Barnett had gone on. Right. This guy, it's run by this African-American guy, right? A kind of Trumper, kind of right wing and all this stuff. And so I click on the show. So, OK, I want to hear what kind of was about. So the first part of that interview before he gets to Barnett is with Mike Lindell. Right. And then after Mike Lindell gets to saying, he's like, you know, he's the MyPillow guy. Right. And so after he gets done spewing everything that he spews, this guy spends, the podcaster, right, spends about a good 3-4 minutes, right, which is a significant period of time, right, just praising Mike Lindell talking about how amazing his pillows are, about how he just got the pajamas too as well. Go out and support this because Mike Lindell makes all this possible.
Oh, I think we're bringing Mike Lindell to Pennsylvania. So
But here's my point, right? This guy, the show, right? The quality, like, I mean, look, this Raging Chickens podcast, right? It's basically like, in terms of like the production, it's a one person show and that's me, right? It's like, making this, all the tech stuff going happen. Here's this guy. And like, you know, so again, we run into our problems and all this. The quality of that guy's podcast was crap, right? And yet he's doing that full time with money from Mike Lindell and these other kind of right-wing grifters, right? And so you got Kathy Barnett coming on. And so you got this like little window into, there's like hundreds of those all over the place. Right, all across this country. And that then what this article did is it showed you, gave you a little window into how Kathy Barnett has been kind of riding this grift wave all the way through those networks.
And how she raised $600,000. The fact that she raised more money than Bardos, who put $400,000 of his own money.
Yeah, that's my favorite part. That's my favorite part. It's like, oh, you know, he's not far behind. So, oh, wait a minute, that was his own money.
Yeah. So like the fact that like it's, yeah, no, when I saw, like, I opened up the I saw like a picture of Fetterman like mashed together, like Fetterman and Barnett on the card the other day.
Yeah, the Business Insider.
I looked at it, I'm just like, oh, you gotta be kidding, like this. And I realized, like, I just kept, I was like, I just did the, you know, the search Barnett, just like fucking read, she like outraised them. I just started laughing because I know who she is and stuff like that, but like people, like, as soon as I saw that, I was like, man, people, Republican consultants had to be shitting themselves, like reading, like, I don't even know like what to say. Like, I feel like this audit, this whole entire grift stuff has broken the model.
Yes,
that Republicans have, the hold that the Republican Party has had on their base. Like, this is the Frankenstein, but like,
this is the, even, no, the grift is the model now.
Yeah, the grift, this is the model. The grift is the model. But like, I guarantee you there are consultants, Republican consultants, like shitting themselves wondering, how the fuck did this woman raise $600,000? Then one, like, reading, it is now financially incentivizing to hop on this audit train.
There you go. There's like, this the important move right there, right?
Yeah. Like, now, like, Kathy Barnett raising $600,000 and you're Jeff Bardos, who only raised $200,000. Like, because he loaned himself the other $400,000. Like, just like, you know, or Sean Parnell, who's already like on that train. But no, like, I guarantee you, Mastriano's raising stupid cash.
Yeah,
I mean, that's probably why he hasn't announced yet. Like, I mean, I'm sure he's raising money hand over fist, like, with this stuff. So,
yeah, but you know, he still does his little Facebook lives in his basement with the paneling. So he's still an everyday man. So let's be clear.
No, I mean, like, it's amazing how, yeah. Like, could you imagine 2 years ago, like? I mean, I was tweeting this out yesterday and I had to like stop because of the joke, but like, because with Wagner, I mean, Wagner with the golf spikes obviously happened, but can you like imagine if 2 years ago going into an election, saying like multiple high profile Wagner supporters were arrested at X protest charged with violent felonies?
Yeah, that would have mattered during that election.
Like, that would have sunk him politically. Like, now it's just like, meh, whatever.
Yeah, like, exactly.
I mean, like, I don't think, like, I mean, like, that would have maybe, I don't know, it would have mattered, though, with Wagner. Maybe a little bit, but, like, I mean, the people voting for him probably.
I think it would have mattered to like, some of the voter Republican base. I think that would have mattered, right? I think at that particular point. I'm not so sure that's going to matter if Mastriano gets into it. You know, because look, you know, like, I mean, like Cyril and I have been talking about a lot in terms of Bucks County is like, you know, the Bucks County, the official Bucks County Republican Party, for example, you know, can say all they want about kind of the, you know, we are the kind of the, you know, middle of the road. The energy in the Bucks County Republican Party, as is true in other county Republican Party, you know, or Republican groups, whatever, across the state, Commonwealth, all the energy is in the kind of the right wing infrastructure. They're the ones who are out knocking doors. They're the ones who are kind of organizing. And, you know, those people who have been in kind of, you know, traditional leadership positions for a long time are just basically holding up the shell for these people to kind of hollow out and, you know, and take over. And so, you know, I think back in Wagner, there was still some question about whether or not that was going to happen. Now I think it, you know, it's gone. I mean, now it's like, if you're a Republican, you haven't jumped ship already, you've actually doubled down on the Trump thing. And we saw this in the numbers in terms of people that, that supported Trump, you know, and supported, you know, the kind of right-wing candidates who are now supporting QAnon adherents in our school boards. I mean, I think we're talking about a different game here. And I think you're also right to point out that the incentive structure for these Republican consultants is going to be like, you know, there's, you know, there are Republican consultants that are sitting in rooms right now saying, well, look, if we want to save our business, we got to hop on that train. And then there's some people like getting a little nervous and kind of feeling uncomfortable in their chairs, but they're ultimately going to go along with it. Right? Because they know there is no money. Or I say the big money is not where they're used to getting it. So.
Yeah. I mean, like you have probably traditional funding sources are drying up a little bit from like normal donors in the area. And I mean, like we saw this a couple months ago with the article from ProPublica, like this has just unleashed a new brand of like mega donors in the party. And then also, yeah, I mean, like, and other things. So, but yeah, whatever.
Pretty crazy.
I mean, it's yeah. We'll see what happens, but I feel like this definitely incentivizes them. I mean, they all are running on this big lie platform.
Yep.
It's how far are they willing to go with it? Like,
that's really the question that's on our plate right now, right?
I mean, who's going to outdo Mastriano? What's?
Yep. Absolutely. Well, I think I'll just kind of direct over folks. Do check out our show from this past Wednesday. It was Cyril and I talk a little bit about what's been happening in Central Bucks County, because this was this actually got a fairly wide play, you know, across Pennsylvania and even broken through some national news, where we saw that the Central Bucks School Board meeting, it really kind of went off the rails. New CDC guidance came down about saying, no, look, we're going to have to require masks indoors now. Basically, kind of what I was talking about before, based upon this new evidence, what we're seeing with the Delta variant. And so there was a school board meeting where they were going to talk about the policies for the fall. It was already going to be this packed venue with all these anti-maskers kind of showing up and all these people saying, no, set our children free. The disgusting messaging that they're saying, like, my kids can't breathe, basically appropriating kind of Eric Garner's like kind of last words when he was killed by a cop, strangled to death, right? I mean, that's where that comes from. And they're appropriating that to kind of maintain their little kind of like white supremacist dream. But anyways, so they were all showing up to the school board basically saying no masks. And a group of parents and medical professionals held a press conference ahead of the board's meeting to try to say, look, to urge caution is really what they're saying. We want to try, we're concerned about our kids and we're concerned about our community given what's happening with the Delta variant. And basically saying, look, we're not saying that nobody wants to wear masks. We want to make sure that everyone is going to be safe. So we're going to urge caution. And so they had this, you know, this press conference. There was a student there who had cancer, who had been fighting cancer, and she was talking about kind of wearing a mask. There were she wasn't the only student. There were some kind of young folks here. They were part of different organizations in Bucks County in the Central Bucks School District, and there were medical professionals, right, and there were parents. And there was a group of these kind of anti-maskers who were just heckling them, like talking over, like shouting down the student who had cancer, talking about why she was concerned about going back to school.
What?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was like there, and they, there was this one, and I don't even understand this one. It was this one woman who gets up. She's a medical professional. She got talking about what some of the new findings are, why we should be urging caution, why this was important. And some woman in this crowd starts screaming murderer over her. Like, I mean, like, I don't even know what that, where that, what that was a reference to. Like, it was just like, she's just calling a murderer, murderer. Right? I'm like, what are you talking about? And you know, what, you know, you only take, okay, you take a step back. Oh yeah, she's a QAnon supporter, I'm sure. Right? And then, you know, kind of shouting them down. And it, you know, it got to the point where you're like, you know, you could imagine there's this one guy, I'm going to forget his name right now, which is horrible. I talked about it on the show on Wednesday, but it's an African-American guy, basically set up this anti-racist or racist coalition. And he was one of the people that spoke. And as he was kind of like leaving away, he was getting called some not nice names by some fine people in that crowd. So, you know, this stuff is happening. And, you know, Sean and I have talked about this on the show. Cyril and I have talked about the show. We've talked about this on the kind of on Out to Coop Live on Monday, is that about what is happening on school boards really is kind of where the rubber is hitting the road in terms of right wing in kind of in the right wing agenda. And the money is flowing in here. And to see like a packed school board meeting on Central Bucks School District, right, with people like screaming down, you know, like attempts to. Screaming down any suggestion that they should have masks and be safe, and then erupting in a cheers and applause when the school board ultimately voted to make masks optional come the fall. That shows you where a bunch of the energy is. And this is the kind of stuff that it consistently makes me concerned. And I know that Sean has shot me a kind of a couple of folks to talk to. We are going to have some people on our Out to Coop Live and some special interview shows from the school district who are running on these school boards. We're going to talk about some of the ways that, say, dark money has been start making its way more and more into these local school board races. So that's one of the things that we're going to be pursuing, especially in the month of August leading up to the beginning of the school year, that we're going to have that kind of distinctive focus when it comes to Out to Coop Live and some of the some additional shows there. So do look ahead for that. One programming note before we head into this week's last call. Next week, I am not going to be around. I'm going to see my folks. So we're going to be off again next week. Most likely, there will not be an Out to Coop Live on Monday show. If I can get it together in time to put together a kind of a replay, I'll go ahead and do that. But I'll not be here next Friday. Wednesday, Cyril may do his second interview show for Wednesday. He's still working on that. As soon as I know about that and can confirm it, I'll let you know what's happening for Wednesday. I just want everybody to be aware of it ahead of time. You're not going to find out about it at the last minute, the last thing I want. So having said that, Sean, anything else going on PA that you want to throw in before we hit the last call?
Just trying to think. I don't really think there's anything too much going on. It's summertime here. Just waiting for the frauded stuff to happen.
Yeah, well, next week. Woohoo!
Yep. Can't wait. Go.
All right. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We will be back right after this quick break. Hey, everybody, it's Kevin Mahoney, editor, founder of Raging Chicken. You were supposed to be going into today's last call, in which it was a kind of an abbreviated last call. We talked a little bit about the new Russian module that fired its thrusters in space after it had docked to the International Space Station. But I digress. It had a bit of a technological weird thing happened in the last segment that made the audio pretty kind of unusable, so or non-existent actually. So I just wanted to kind of check in and let you know that's going on. But I do want to say this before we go today, that it is Sean Kitchen's birthday tomorrow, July 31st. Make sure you wish him a happy birthday. Thanks to Sean for all that he's done, all that he continues to do here in the fight. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. See ya!